Going to be continuing our study in the book of Genesis this morning. If you could get your Bibles turned to Genesis chapter 13. Basically, we've gotten to the point last week where we're talking about the relationship with Abram and Lot and the problems that's been caused because of them sharing property or trying to share property and having so many flocks and so forth. I'm going to read down through the first four verses again. We had read that far last week but didn't get to talk about it too awfully much. So Abram went up from the Egypt to the Negev, and he and his wife and all that belonged to him, and Lot went with him. Now Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver and in gold, and he went on his journeys from the Negev as far as Bethel to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar, which he had made there for formerly, and there Abram called on the name of the Lord. So we see again that this is always what he does as he goes and he places his tent in position. A lot of times he'll build an altar. This time he's going back to where he had been before. And so he's calling on the name of the Lord, which means, of course, that he is praying to God, and he's giving God the glory for all that he's been blessed with and taking care of him to this point. He's back in familiar territory now. Let's read on. It says in verse 5, "Now Lot, who went with Abraham, also had flocks and herds and tents, and the land could not sustain them while dwelling together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to remain together. And there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. Now the Canaanite and the Perizzite were dwelling in the land." Well, it seems that sometimes perhaps we get a little more blessed than we need because they have a lot of goods and a lot of animals that need to be fed. And now they need to share this land. And of course, the people that are hands-on, the day-in and day-out workers there, are probably feuding among each other on which grasslands they should be able to possess at whatever time. So we do realize, of course, that Lot has been blessed because of his relationship with Abram. Now remember, Lot is his nephew, and Abram decided to take Lot with him when they left Haran. And so he feels, I'm sure, somewhat responsible for him. And again, I want to put us in the position of understanding what it meant to be a patriarch in a family back then, because this is going to come into play when we talk about Melchizedek in the next chapter in particular. A patriarch has what basically responsibilities in a family back then? Okay, lead the family in what way? Okay. Okay, the patriarch is considered to be the head of the family. There is responsibility that comes along with that. They are to be the ones that are the intermediate between God and their family. In other words, in many ways, they are the priest of the family. In fact, a lot of times that's exactly what we see in the New Testament. The patriarch of the family is called the priest of the family. In that respect, how important it is in for them to be godly individuals, good influences. If you're looking at the family itself, you might say, well, for their sons or their daughters, it's vitally important. Yes, absolutely it is. But what about all the other people they come in contact with, or the people that are servants of theirs? Is it important for all of them as well? In other words, do you have to be just with everybody? Should you be just with everybody, or just be concentrated on taking care of your own family, immediate family there? But there's going to be influence that goes on with everybody here. For Lot, he's influenced heavily by Abram. He's blessed by the very fact that Abram has a great relationship with God. As Abraham is blessed, so is Lot. And we see to the point here, he's blessed so much that there's a conflict that arises. So something's going to have to be done about this strife that's happening here. Let's read on. "Then Abram said to Lot, 'Please let there be no strife between you and me, nor between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brothers. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If to the left, then I will go to the right, or if to the right, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted up his eyes and saw all the valley of the Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as you go to the Zoar. So Lot chose for himself all the valley of the Jordan, and Lot journeyed eastward. Thus they separated from each other. So Lot chose for himself, verse 12. Abram settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled in the cities of the valley and moved his tents as far as Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked exceedingly and sinners against the Lord. Abram is showing, of course, a great concern for the relationship. If Abram doesn't do something about this, if he doesn't address the situation, what could possibly happen? I mean, it's going to escalate. And it could get to the point of separation, but separation in a different way, to the point that there could be battles going on. I'm not talking about physical battles, but there could be a lot of animosity between the two groups here. Abram realizes that cannot happen. Now, there's a great lesson in that for us. There's going to be times in our life where, even though we're family, there's going to be differences. There's going to be some kind of strife that could happen in our family. I'm talking about the church family. How are we supposed to address that? What's a great way to address that we see in this example right here? Separate. Thank you. if we carry that thought through, do we see a positive effect on both sides from the separation? Not so much. Not so much at all, in fact. In fact, strife could continue that way. But no, the idea here is one person says, I'm going to reach out to you. Let's find a solution for the problem we have here. Now, in that separation, did Abram expect that Lot would pitch his tent towards Sodom and say, oh, you know what? I'm going to move down to where I know people are exceedingly wicked down here against the Lord. No, he didn't expect that to be part of the problem, part of the solution. The solution was to take care and make sure there's peace among the family there. Now, what that other person does or what Lot did is going to be his choice, of course, along the line. The problem is, even with the positive influence that Abram has had on his nephew, what is the nature of the nephew? We see it in this conflict that's going on here.
Self-centered.
Yes, because Abram basically says to him, there's all this land in front of us here. You take one section, and I'll take the section that you don't want, that you choose not to take. Now, who's putting faith in God in that choice there? Abram is putting faith. You see, Abram's faith in God allows him to even offer that choice. But the problem is, Lot's lack of faith in God compels him to make his choice. That's what I see happen here. Who is Lot depending on? Lot's in essence depending on the grass to take care of his flocks here. I mean, honestly, you might think to yourself, well, it's kind of a no-brainer in that, of course, if you have this or you have this over here, and this is obviously going to be to your benefit, you're going to take this over here. But that's not the faith issue I'm talking about, or the relationship issue that I'm talking about. The relationship issue and the faith issue is that Abram had faith enough in God to say, whichever one I'm going to be residing on, God is going to take care of me. Now, you would hope that Lot had learned that from his uncle, but he hadn't. He was still compelled by his lack of faith, or his less amount of faith in God, to make the decision that seemed like the worldly decision. And we have to be careful about those kind of decisions in our life. You know, there's always going to be these decisions that come along, it might be a decision concerning a job, it might be a decision concerning whether a move to a different city, will this job change help me more than my pocketbook? Am I bringing God into this decision? I guess that's what I'm getting at. Am I bringing God into this decision? Am I making it a prayerful decision? Because on the surface, it might say, well, take this job position over here. It pays 10% more or 20% more. I have to do that. But what are the ramifications about picking up and moving your family from one place to another? What could possibly happen that would be a negative thing in that respect? Let's say that you belong to a church family. Your kids are in a great youth group. You've got close friends there. You've built these relationships over the years. But now you have this choice in your life. And I'm not saying that you don't take that job, by the way. All I'm saying is, do we prayerfully consider all the things that go along with that along the way? Most everybody, I would imagine, when they make a major change like that, at least in their mind, if they don't write it down, but at least in their mind, they've got the pros and cons to go along with it. We all tend to do that. We should do that. For this reason, it's a positive thing. For this reason, it might be more positive to stay here. Yes, that's what I hear over and over again, too. Okay. Was the decision for Lot about the money? Yes, it was. That's exactly what it was about. In their way, I mean, at least Abram in his way is trying to address it in, I think, a godly manner, though. When you look at the solution that he says. Well, maybe the way that I can say this a little bit better for our purposes is when you have a decision, for instance, if you did have to move from one community to another, or you were thinking about moving from one community to the other, is high on our priority list, high on our prayer list, God, is there a place for me to serve there? God, is there obviously something that is needed there that I might be able to provide in that community? Maybe in the church, or maybe in the community itself. That doesn't seem to be, generally speaking, the high point of our list there. Now, I'm not saying some of the things we're thinking about aren't beneficial, because obviously if you're making more money and you're doing well with that money, doing good things with that money, that's fantastic. You might be looking at the school system and saying, is that school system, do I want to move into a community with a strong school system there? There are various things you're looking at. I want to be in a safe neighborhood for my children. Those are things we definitely look at. But do we think in terms of, what is the church like that I'm moving to there? And if they're struggling for whatever reason, can I be a benefit in trying to help them in that struggle? Or perhaps, can I just sit in the back and not be recognized anymore? You know, not worry about stepping it up there. Now, these are the things that we should be thinking about in any of the decisions we have. Bruce? No, I think what we're doing is making a balance on all of this stuff. In fact, what you're going to find, of course, I think what you're going to find is the people that are serving in one community are going to be serving in another community. Yeah. That's going to happen. But are we factoring that into our decision as well? Or perhaps we're factoring, well, you know, I'm coming from a 500-member church that seems to be doing very well. I don't want to get tied up in a 50-member church that, you know, it's going to be, expectations are going to be high. Well, it's a lesson to be learned for Lot from Abram, even in a choice like this, because as Abram's faith grows, and it does, we see him making better and better choices himself. But for Lot, he has to have that training ground from somebody. For his uncle to state at this time in his life, you take whatever, and I'll take the rest, or I'll take what's left over. Don't you think that there's supposed to be some kind of training ground going on for Lot that way, that when he gets older in his life, he's going to pass that kind of lesson on to somebody else? That would be the hope. Not that it happens all the time, of course, but that would be part of what the patriarch is teaching the younger people coming up too, his sons and the others in his household. Well, I think for any choice we make in our life, what we have to concentrate on, though, keep at the forefront, is does this enhance my relationship with God? Will this enhance my relationship with God? Will it keep me firm in the Lord? Is there a possibility that this decision could somehow hurt that relationship with God? Jim? That's a sad commentary. That's definitely a sad commentary. But there are lessons to be learned there. You know, Lot, in essence, has failed to count. I believe he's failed to count the true cost of that move that he makes there. Maybe he doesn't even know his own character good enough. Yeah.
Well,
He didn't, and I like your commentary that you started out with on it too. He could have come back to Abram and said, "I think we can work this out between the two of us without making this separation."
We'll fire a couple here. Of first and hire some
yeah.
new guys, right?
Yeah. You know, a secret is something that seems to be hidden to most people, and I think what Paul's saying that there is, it's not hidden to me anymore, but for other people, it's still a secret. And for many of us, we really do relate to that. And there are times in our life, I believe for most of us, that we feel like we're doing pretty well with that. And then there's other times where you do struggle with being content with what God has provided, especially in a world where it seems like everybody wants to get ahead beyond somebody else. So it's a real, yeah, it's a, I like the word he uses there. It's still kind of a secret. And sometimes our biggest problem is we take the problem with us, which is me. So, you know, it's a common denominator, you know. So we have to deal with that no matter what. Yeah, you're looking, it's a proactive faith is what it is. You know, there are things going on throughout communities all over the place. It's a matter of being proactive and looking for those things. You know, and being in the business you are, the business I'm in, you come to realize as a contractor, you would like everything to go exactly the way you had planned it from the beginning. That's not going to happen. A lot of it's going to be solving a problem somewhere along the line. I had a recent job where I was lined up to do a fireplace face out of stone. And as I always do, I got the exact dimensions for the opening of the fireplace. I got the exact dimensions for the fireplace surround to make sure everything covered properly on it. Double check those, triple check those, that's what you do. Built it exactly that way, and the woman was thrilled with the way it looked when it was done. And then I get a phone call saying, "Well, you know, we made a mistake on that opening, and we don't know what to do about it." The woman is devastated. I mean, this is the end of the world for her. She's my age, so I know she's been down this road before. But it was really devastating to her because she loved the way it looked. And I told her, I said, "Carol, don't worry about it. We'll get it taken care of. And when I'm all done with the fix on it, you will never know that anything was ever amiss on it. You don't worry about it. It's not your responsibility. That's going to be my responsibility to take care of." Now, I knew going into the fix, I'm not doing this for any money. I'm not getting anything extra for this. But it has to be done. Now, you could lose sleep over that, but it was just a matter of going out there, and I spent probably 5 or 6 hours fixing the job. When I was done with it, you couldn't tell that anything was amiss. It looked great. She was happy again on it. But as a contractor, you realize those days are going to come along. Do not fret over them. Do not worry over them. It's just life. Now, when I was 25 years old, I didn't have that kind of attitude. I'll tell you, I did not have that kind. That would have really bothered me tremendously that I have to go out and I got to spend 5 or 6 hours of my time and take care of this thing that was not my responsibility. But as you get older, and hopefully as you trust in the Lord more, you just realize, I'm not going to retire 1 second faster by not doing that job correctly. Not one of my meals is going to taste any better in my life by not doing that job properly. In the long run, it will mean nothing. Let God handle it. Let God take the burden. You have a happy client. You have a a happy group of guys at the stove place that will recommend you over and over again. There's still blessings in that down the road. You've experienced the exact same thing. And that's what God calls us to. And you tend to learn that as you get older, or you just are a miserable person all your life. And there are people, by the way, that don't learn that. And they're always miserable about something.
Yeah,
Peter. There is so much benefit in putting our faith in God and letting Him handle even the torments in our life that otherwise we would dwell on it. We would just continue to dwell on it constantly. And I feel for the people out in the world that don't have that in their life, that they can just let it go, because they are truly miserable people. You know, it was Apostle Paul that was talking about if Christ did not really die and be raised, what kind of people would we be as Christians? If we didn't have faith in the resurrection, what kind of people would we be as Christians? We'd be the people to be laughed at, basically, and just go, oh, look at those miserable people out there. But we're not that in our life. We're not that. And I love the contrast that we see in Abram and in Lot here, because Abram has learned this in his life, and Lot has yet to learn it. And you're hoping, if you don't read the next chapter, you're hoping, oh, he's going to learn from this then. Yeah, he is. He is. In fact, in this chapter, actually, in the next chapter, where we see that he's literally saved at that time. You know, before we close our thoughts on this particular part of it, though, again, in a contrast, what is the mindset of the people that he's moving towards, that Lot's moving towards? We see that in verse 13. I'll read it again. Now, the men of Sodom were wicked exceedingly, and sinners against the Lord. The inference in that is that they're not unaware of God, but they choose to sin against God that way. And it says exceedingly they're sinners here. It's not just a matter of, well, you know, they had the problems of the world out there and they were distracted by the world and so on. No, they're looking for opportunity to sin against God. And they know it's sin. Now, that's what's so kind of appalling about Lot's choice, in that he continues to move closer. I get the picture that he continues to move closer and closer to Sodom. That it's just not a matter he sets up his tent on the outskirts of the city as soon as he gets down there, but there's something that's like drawing him further and further down into that city until he's in the city down there. And that's, of course, what we're going to see later on as we continue reading here. Let's read a few more verses here, starting in verse 14. And the Lord said to Abram after Lot had separated from him, "Now lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are, northward and southward and eastward and westward. For all the land which you see, I will give it to you and to your descendants forever. And I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that anyone can number the dust of the earth, then your descendants can also be numbered. Arise, walk about the land through its length and breadth, for I will give it to you." And Abraham moved his tent and came and dwelt by the oaks of Mamre, which are in Hebron, and there he built an altar to the Lord. So again, God confirms the land grant that was promised to Abram earlier. Bruce pointed out that even that land that Lot now possesses is still Abram's to have and to hold and to do with as he please. His pleasure was to allow Lot to be on that land for the time being there. But God says that's going to be your land. Now this land grant, of course, this promise is something that we see come to fruition in particular in hundreds of years later, because when the people re-enter the land of Canaan from bondage, it's their land. I mean, God has designated as their land through Abraham. He's given it to them. So he's going to make sure that they're going to be able to possess it. But he also confirms his promise of a son and descendants here yet again. And remember, at this time, he does not have an heir. He does not have a son. So he's confirming that to him again. In chapter 14, I'm not going to read a whole lot of chapter 14 because I know you've been over this several times, but we see a war that's going on. In essence, there's a couple of sides here with kings. Now, we've got to remember back in those days, when it says a king, it might have been a king of a relatively very small area, maybe even a city-state, much like in the ancient times of Greece, where you had the city-state of Sparta or Athens or someplace like that, and they had their own individual kings that way. Apparently, there's one of these kings, though, the tribute has been paid for years. And some of the other kings decide to rebel. So the king that had the tribute paid to him, collects the ones that are loyal to him, and they go down and they basically war against these other kings. Well, Sodom and Gomorrah caught up in this battle, of course, and they're defeated. And the spoils are taken, much like they would have been back then. They're basically carried away to the other kingdoms. Who's included in these spoils? Well, Lot is. Lot's family is. And so they're taken up in this conflict. We see that who finds out about this? It says in verse 12, they also took Lot, Abram's nephew, and his possessions departed, for he was living in Sodom. Then a fugitive came and told Abram the Hebrew. Now he was living in the living by the oaks of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Ishkol and the brother of Aner, and there were allies with Abram. And when Abram heard that his relative had been taken captive, he led out his trained men, born in his house, 318, and went in pursuit as far as Dan. And he divided his forces against them by night, and he and his servants, and defeated them and pursued them as far as Hobah, which is north of Damascus. And he brought back all the goods, and also brought back his relative Lot with his possessions, and also the women and the people. Now, I have to realize as I read this that certain things come to mind. First of all, Abram's concerned for Lot. He's going to go get his nephew. If you added up the kings that fought against Sodom, you see it's a pretty good force that has fought against them. And now they're basically going to, you know, hightail it back home. These are hardened warrior men that have come down and taken these things. What's the number that Abram has to work with here? Yeah. It's interesting, it's exactly 380. It doesn't say about 300. It doesn't say, you know, there was a little over 300. 318. It's interesting how God does that from time to time. He just puts that number out there. And now we get a real visual on this. Well, that's a lot of guys for herdsmen. He's had a lot of flocks. Probably needed that many people, maybe more. But what are they trained to do, in essence? They're trained to take care of the animals. By the way, that's not, you might think, well, I was just standing around on a staff all day. You know, pretty easy stuff to do. No, there's stuff that goes on with that, too. I mean, they have to work at this. There's hard labor involved in it sometimes. There's protection against wild animals from time to time as well. Point is, they're not trained as warriors. They're not trained for battle. I'm not saying that none of these guys have ever not been in battle before. But if you were an odds maker, what are you thinking here? Yeah, but that's what I'm wondering about, Peter. Is it those kind of men we're talking about? Are we talking about people that have great training in this? No. It's not said one way or the other on it. But again, I put it up that if I were an odds maker looking at these two bands of fighters here, my money's on the kings on this. If I don't put God in the equation, my money's on the kings on it. But the wording here is that somebody comes and tells him, and immediately he has a plan. I'm going to go get him. In fact, I'll read it again. It says, verse 14. When Abram heard that his relative had been taken captive, he led out his trained men, born in his house, 318, and went in pursuit as far as Dan. I mean, he didn't hesitate to do that. It's what you do. It's what you do, Bruce. So, I mean, there's faith there, and that God's going to... And what did God just tell him, by the way? You're going to have descendants. You're going to have son. Maybe he's gotten to the point where he's thinking, I'm not indestructible, but You know, I'm not bulletproof. Of course, there weren't bullets back then, but I'm not bulletproof. But, you know, I trust in God. Go ahead and go after my nephew. And there's not this big hesitation that goes on. And I like that part of the story in particular because I don't want to have hesitation in my life. If I know something's right to do, if I know that's the thing to pursue, I don't want to hesitate about it. We sometimes outthink ourselves that way, you know, or come up with an excuse for why we just simply can't do that. I love that about Soul Quest. I love that about our young people, because we'll pull up, you've seen this, we'll pull up to a job, and we've got all these tools, and there's some weeds that are higher than you can imagine. There's some bad stuff to deal with. And those kids are out there grabbing the tools and the gloves and going at it. They're just going at it. Now, granted, maybe 2 hours into the project, or you know, some of them are getting a little tired and sitting around a little bit. But, you know, get to the next job and they're at it again. That way, there's not the hesitation that goes on with that. Yeah, we can do that. That's what we're here for. That's what we're here for. Let's just do it. Abram's thinking, that's what I'm here for. I'm just going to do it. Oh, yes, good point. Good point.
Most of us adults would be like, oh, I can't just be walking up to a stranger's door.
Yeah.
They don't hesitate.
If you hadn't grown up in Soul Quest, and I did not grow up in a Soul Quest type situation, to think about me being 11 or 12 or 14 years old and going and knocking a door and talking about Christ to somebody, my knees would be shaking like crazy. But these young kids, it's like, and when they've done it for a day or so, maybe their first time they're out there, and they've watched how it's done, they're anxious to be the one doing the lead the next time on the next door there. And I love that fact about our young people. That's what convinces me that they are spiritual, that they are willing to do this. They don't hesitate to do these kind of things. Let's don't ever kill that in our young people, because that's church growth right there. We always need to remember God calls us to do what's right. We're beyond time right now. Thanks again for all of your comments, and we'll start our service in a few minutes.